Chapter 27, The Son of Solomon. Imagine a broad, majestic river suddenly dividing into two turbulent branches, and you have a picture of the Hebrew nation after the death of Solomon. The men of Israel, in reply to the insolent speech of Rehoboam, turned a bold front to the king and asked, "What portion have we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse." And they passed the war cry down the line, "Every man to your tents, O Israel!" As they marched away, they shouted back, "Now see to thine own house, David." In order to put down this open defiance, inspired by the leadership of Jeroboam, the young king Rehoboam hastened to raise an army of 180,000 men with which to force the Israelites back into the kingdom. Perhaps neither side stopped to give a thought to the disasters which would follow such a conflict. At that critical time, heathen nations were closely watching the envied empire of David and Solomon. The old enemy Egypt lay to the south, always craftily alert. On the north was a large body of people living in Syria, and to the east were the changing powers of Babylon and Assyria. Besides, there were the smaller but equally threatening foes called Philistines, Ammonites, Edomites, and others, all of whom would rejoice to make of the Hebrew land a common battleground. In the midst of Rehoboam's elaborate preparations, the prophet Shemaiah came in. The prophets had a way of appearing on important occasions. That they were not always welcome made no difference. Neither king nor queen overawed them. On this occasion, the prophet came to put a stop to the whole undertaking. "Ye shall not go up, nor fight against your brethren," he commanded. "Return every man to his house." And he named his authority by saying, "Thus saith Jehovah." We are not told how Rehoboam liked this interference which broke up his fine army. It seems that when the soldiers heard about the command, they quickly departed for their homes, leaving Rehoboam without an army. It is likely that the officers saw how willing the king was to give up the war on a good pretext. Like his father Solomon, he was a man of peace. The humbled Rehoboam had been given his first lesson, and he set to work to profit by it. Instead of wasting his time in useless regrets, he started in to rule his people well. There were still great advantages in Judah. It was the tribe of promise, and there was Jerusalem with her priceless treasures and high associations. The king turned oftener to old counselors than to the giddy young men at this time. It was a wise head that mapped out before him the dangers lying around defenseless little Judah, and the great need of fortified cities to protect the frontier and to hold commanding positions. The work of strengthening the reduced kingdom was promptly begun. Walled cities with strong breastworks and high towers appeared here and there throughout the realm. On the south, where attacks were most likely to take place, a line of walled towns was completed. In all these, the king stored large quantities of provisions in case of a siege, and weapons of warfare, such as shields and spears. As his sons grew older, he wisely placed them as rulers over the principal cities, so as to make of the kingdom one large household. 3 years of prosperity followed. It was not long before it became known throughout Israel and other neighboring lands that Rehoboam was giving his people peace and plenty, and many came flocking in from less favored regions. His kingdom was made stronger and better by an additional number of priests and Levites who came to be near Jerusalem and to escape the religious changes in Israel. It would be pleasant to close the story of Rehoboam right here. His youthful folly had received its own punishment, and he had profited by the experience. But the sins of Solomon were once again coming to the surface in the life of his son. After this period of success, when all was going well, it gradually came to the king that he could manage his kingdom without the Lord's priest and prophet. A desire grew in his heart for the heathen gods with which he had become familiar as a child. Like many later kings, he looked with favor on many gods with a view to greater security. The result was that before many years, something very much like idol worship was established in Judah. Then came the disastrous experience which showed Rehoboam how weak and helpless he was when he turned to heathen gods. In the fifth year of his reign, a heavy war cloud came up in the south. It was from Egypt, for the Egyptians had set themselves in battle array. What the reason for this was, we are not told, but hardly an excuse was needed in those days for a stronger nation to attack a weaker. Shishak, the ruler of Egypt, came up into Judah with a splendid army of Egyptians, Lydians, Arabs, and Ethiopians. The Bible tells us that he had 1,200 chariots, 60,000 horsemen, and infantry without number. The walled cities, so carefully fortified, fell before the conquering army as it swept on north to Jerusalem. This was the time for the prophet's voice to be heard. The princes had fled from the cities as Shishak's army advanced and had hastened to Jerusalem to the king. The prophet came before this princely company with a stern message. Thus saith Jehovah, ye have forsaken me. Therefore have I left you in the hands of Shishak. Jerusalem was terror-stricken, and the king and princes humbly cried out, Jehovah is righteous. But their penitence came too late. Shishak appeared before Jerusalem, and the gates were opened to him. He rudely entered the sacred temple and the king's palace and seized the treasures of gold and silver. The famous shields of gold made by Solomon he carried away. He spared the city but imposed a tribute on Judah, and loaded with wealth, he marched back to Egypt with a long line of captives following. On the walls of the old temple of Karnak in Egypt is an inscription in hieroglyphics which enthusiastic guides always point out to sightseers. These characters are now understood, and the world may read today what Shishak so proudly inscribed nearly 3,000 years ago. Not only does he give the names of the cities which he took in this invasion, but the record is made doubly convincing by showing sculptured figures of Hebrew captives. Rehoboam was left weak and discouraged. He continued to rule over his reduced kingdom 12 years longer, but the glory had left Judah and Jerusalem. The tribute paid to Egypt was a humiliation, and the brass and copper vessels used in the temple, instead of the gold and silver ones which were beautifying and enriching Egypt, were a constant reminder of defeat and misfortune. Rehoboam's rule lasted only 17 years, and in that time his kingdom had been reduced from a powerful nation commanding the attention of the world to a feeble vassal tribe.